And away we go here. It is Thursday, August 29th, 2019, 15 coming up on 16 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into WWGH Radio, and this is one of my favorite segments that we do each and every Thursday at this particular time, Over the Back Fence with Pastor Steve Whitaker. Now, I do want to remind you at the top of the program, so we don't run out of time today, that if for some reason you're in your car right now and cannot listen to this whole program, if you do want to do that, you can hear it when it's replayed on Sunday morning from 9:10 to 10 a.m. and next Tuesday from 6:10 until 7 p.m. And of course, Pastor Whitaker's other show, The Pastor Spot, is live every Tuesday, 5:10 to 6 p.m., replays on Wednesday from 3:10 to 4 p.m., and on Sunday morning, right before the replay of this show, 8:10 until 9 a.m. And if you're one of those people who are always on the go, you can always go to the website, wwgh1071.com, and go under the Programs tab, and you will find all of Pastor Whitaker's shows, and this one, Over the Back Fence. So here we go on this Thursday, Over the Back Fence. We'll bring in Pastor Whitaker. Pastor, how are you?
Good. How are you this morning, Scott?
Doing great.
Nice day coming in this morning. What a beautiful day out there.
Yeah.
Starting to cool off a little bit. What happened to our summer?
Well, you know, I wonder if this is it or not. I wonder if this is just a snap or if this is the end.
Because I'm guessing snap.
I think snap, too. Because we've had really warm days in September, and we've even had them in October at points. So I think this just might be a cold snap we're going through.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's been an interesting year. We saw all the crops not getting in the beginning of the year. Now they're just flourishing and doing wonderful, the ones that are in the ground. And we have so much to be positive about. I was in a Bible study meeting last night, and one of the ladies said, you know, we're always talking about, you know, what are we going to do about this issue and that issue. And she said, you know what, we really need to promote what's going on that's good. And there is some really good things going on. And I think that we forget that sometimes. You know, we forget all the positives that we see every day. I'll throw one out there that I don't think, and I'm really feel for you if you're struggling with cancer or you know somebody that has lost a battle with cancer recently. But all in all, there's great strides being made in that area of people that have cancer, the longevity they're given sometimes when it is a terminal cancer. And then again, so many of the cancers are being put into remission that, you know, never were before. I think that's a wonderful thing to celebrate. When you hear the C word today, the doctor, it's not always the death sentence it was when you and I were growing up. I mean, you heard it was like, uh-oh, you know, this is it. And it's not so much. I think that's a wonderful thing that's going on. But this morning, I mentioned to you that I kind of like to talk about the ability that we all have to disagree and still exist together. Obviously, if you go to a church and you're going to agree with that doctrine in that church, or you're not going to be comfortable, you're not going to stay. But we live in this big country. We live in the United States of America, and there's many of us with different opinions, and I think that we can learn to exist. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to believe that what I believe is right, and you can believe what you believe is right, but it doesn't mean that we have to do things like be so hateful and in the streets screaming and marching at each other and declaring something that is just a difference of opinion, trying to get it made to be hate speech. You know, what's hate speech? Hate speech is hate. If I tell you because for whatever reason it is, whether it's just my own moral conviction or my biblical conviction, that I don't agree with something and I don't think it's right and I don't believe you should do it is one thing. But hate speech would be, I think you don't need to go out and kill all the people that are doing that. You see the difference? And I think that sometimes we go overboard and just, hey, don't even bring it up or say anything negative about it, or that's hate speech. We got to be careful of that in this country, that we don't start down that road. Because we know what happens to countries that happens with. But what are some of your thoughts, Scott?
Well, it's interesting because I think that's a fine line. And there are two different ways that I look at this. And it's interesting because recently I just switched over to using the digital antenna to get all the free channels. And a show that I watched this past weekend after I did that was the old All in the Family show. And it's interesting because there are words in that show that did air on primetime television back in the 1970s and early 80s that cannot be shown today. There are words that are used to describe ethnicities that you cannot use now on television. Now, I think at that and I say, well, have we become too sensitive? Well, the truth of the matter is, if in 2019 somebody got on the air and used those words, I was trying to think of a good way you could use those words, and I don't think there is a good way you could use those words. I don't know what the negative fashion would be unless you were trying to quote somebody. And even at that, I think it's going to sound bad. So those words were, I think, hate speech. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You were trying to call somebody something. It's like the argument that always went down.
Is it hate or is it distaste?
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting because it depends on how you define hate speech. Because this argument went down for years, and it eventually led to the FCC banning the word. A new word that did not used to be banned by the FCC, that is actually one of those words that you could say on All in the Family, was the N-word. And that's exactly how we have to refer to it, because you cannot say it.
Because it's become the Holy Grail.
Well, but
of bad words. How is it any different than the W word or the
right? And those
the amount of anti-Semitism today is off the charts, and nobody's saying anything about anything anti-Semitic.
Well, I think what happened was with that particular word, because it was around for a long time, and it was used in novels. I believe it's in To Kill a Mockingbird. It was used on television shows, and I think what happened was nobody can say it's a positive term. It's not used in a positive way. But somewhere along the line, a group of people decided to make the case that if somebody who is not of that race uses that word, that that's wrong, but we hear people in that race using that word, so why is it okay for them and not okay for me? I always felt that was a flawed argument, because if I am anything, if I am of any ethnicity, race, anything, if I'm talking about it, nobody's going to call me... I'll give you an example, because I think it leads into what you're talking about. The war that's been going on forever is Palestine and Israel. It's mm-hmm. been going on forever. Now, if somebody in Israel uses a Jewish slur, nobody's going to jump on them because they are Jewish. Nobody will say a thing. But if a Palestinian went on, if the head of the Palestinian government used a Jewish slur,
which they do every day,
would be gone. Well, but it's and it causes that friction and that heat to get worse.
That argument to me, I think it does hold water, that why can they do it but you can't do it. And I'll tell you why. Because say that I'm going to the N-word is banned, okay, but say that I am a person of African-American descent, and I use that term talking to someone, I am using that in a derogatory way based on the way it was used towards me years ago. You understand what I mean? So the intent is still there. It may be you doing, but the intent doesn't change in how it was originally meant and how it's being used. So the point is that if it's going to be not okay in one group, it shouldn't be okay in the other to even talk that way. But here's the thing that I think that we've really run into a problem with. Now all of the family took it to an extreme. There were not that many Archie Bunkers in the world. There were some, believe me, and everybody probably knows a family member that was a lot like that. But they were just trying to get into the home to see it. Now, the thing is that when I was growing up, so many of those terms were used so commonly, and I'm not even talking about the N-word. I'm talking about towards Italians, towards whatever ethnic group, towards us. I mean, as a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, you know, people would call you a stupid wasp. but my point being that people blew it off because they were just words. And it really didn't, like for instance, I'll give you a good example. There was, when I was younger, there was a guy that a bunch of us ran around with. And all of his friends called him N-Bill. He was black. That word, N-Bill. And that's what everyone called him. And that's what we called him. There was not one bit of hatred towards that person in the world. We loved him. But that's what he went by. Now, that would be so hateful today. But you know, he had no problem with it. He'd leave you a phone message, "Hey, Steve, this is blank Bill."
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that, though, is do you think we could find a high school student today or their parents who could hear that, who would think it was okay today?
No, not today, because we have deemed all that stuff not okay. But, you know, and I can understand that. I can go along with, I'll give you a good example, you know, one point in Scripture, Jesus referred to the Samaritans as dogs, and he was referring to it from the point of that's what everybody considers them as the Samaritan dogs. But however, the point was that they got along still. And it didn't go to blows. It didn't go to deeming something hate speech. We have more important things to do in this world. Look, if you've got somebody, if you are from a moral standpoint that you want to respect people and you want to treat people fairly and you don't want to be nasty, then you're not going to talk that way to people. So the point being, just either call them out personally, or if it's a radio station that does it prior to the banning, just don't listen to it. I don't want anything to do with that. See, we keep trying to legislate personal responsibility away from individuals. Trust me, if someone out there is using the N-word in a huge way and constantly, no one's going to give them a foot up and a leg up. And if there's a group of them doing it, they're going to be looked at with disdain, and people are going to say, you know, I don't know about that. Let them drown in their own mire. What I'm saying is we don't have to legislate every action we do.
Well, I think there are a couple points to this. On the whole, the N-word, because I think to make this clear to the audience, as a whole, the N-word is not legislated in society. If you were to go out in your front yard and say it today, if you were to call somebody,
but it is legislated because you just said you can't use it on the air.
But I'll come back. But if you go out and call somebody that in your front yard, if you went to the grocery store and did it, if you sent it in a text message or an email fully spelled out, you can't be arrested for that. It's not banned off the face of the earth. So it hasn't been legislated in that way. Where it has been legislated is by one group, the FCC, who said, we don't think this is okay to be on the public airwave anymore. And one of the reasons that happened was because, see, you know, we think that all the smart people live on the opposite side who wanted to get that word banned. But that's really not what happened. People weren't protesting to get that word banned. It was the people who were on the air. One of the favorite words of on-air comedians and the proliferation of zoos, morning zoos, and the proliferation of comedy was, well, if we say it and you're offended, well, that's just satire. We really didn't mean that. We didn't mean it how we said it. Well, that's not okay, because I've seen a lot of things that people scream satire about that are not satire. look at the definition of satire.
Right, I agree with that. But, you know, the thing is, first of all, it wasn't just a group. What's FCC stand for? Federal Communication. There you go. So it was a federal law that came across.
But I don't think Congress and the Senate voted on it.
So, but it was an entity of the federal government.
Legislated
action. So here's the thing, that if we're going to be that way with... We can't hold up one word as the only word we're going to do this with. If that's what you're going to do, you know, have you listened to much comedy lately? Oh my word! Try being a Christian. Try being a Jew. Try being a typical white male. I mean, the amount of slander that comes in is unbelievable. And the point is, I guess what I'm trying to say is, now I want everyone out there to understand something. It's not, I don't approve of using that word that we talked about.
Right.
And I understand it shouldn't be on the air. It shouldn't be anywhere. And as a pastor, it certainly never better come from a pulpit. But what I'm saying is this, is that at some point, we as people must learn to protect ourselves and stand up for our own ideals and quit wanting someone to pass a law so I don't have to deal with it anymore. And the point is, from a pastor's standpoint, if you're doing something that I deem immoral, you have every right in this country to do something immoral. But when it affects the innocent, then I stand up. When it affects children, when it affects people that it shouldn't be affecting, if it's affecting you and you're the one doing it, you know, that's your business. And you know, the way I feel, you're going to have to answer to God for that. And I'm going to have to answer to God for what I do. But we have gone back to what we were saying about the Samaritan people earlier. You know, Jesus met the woman at the well. She was a Samaritan. Why were they both at a well? They were both at a well because that was where the water was, and even though they didn't intermingle because of their beliefs, they got along. And we're getting to a point in this country where there's some real viral hatred out there for different groups that I didn't see 20 years ago. You know, the worst case, I mean, most of the racism 20, 30, 40 years ago was verbal. It wasn't in action. Now, there may have been, now I will say this, that maybe there were some opportunity differences, some things of that nature. But the actual feelings towards each other, man, I'll tell you what, I know my father had a guy that helped him train the horses. His nickname was Rev, by the way. He was a Christian man, but he was a horse trainer. And my parents loved that man dearly. And another man that worked with my dad that would exercise horses for him, he got killed one night in an auto accident. My father just wept. But at the same time, my father was of that generation that he's going to use a slang term towards Italians or anyone else, including himself. I remember one time when I first met my father-in-law, my wife brought me on to his house, and he goes, "Ah, so you brought something home this time that was a term used for Italian people." And I just chuckled, and he laughed, and you know, there was no thought of it. But today we've become, here's what, you ever hear the term, which I know you have, pound foolish, and what's the rest of that?
Which?
How about this one? How about step over a dime to pick up a penny, that kind of a thing.
Well, yeah.
And I think that what we've done is we've made words and things people say this horrible thing, but yet our attitudes have gotten worse in hatred towards each other. Nobody can convince me out there that in 2019 that we are more compassionate as a people than we were in 1960 with each other, because that would be just a bunch of hooey.
Well, yeah, I don't think that is I think compassion is an interesting thing, and I think hate speech is such a large topic, because in the United States we cannot get away from the FCC, get away from the legislation. If you would go into a department store as an employee, mm-hmm. working, getting a paycheck, drawing a paycheck from that department store, I guarantee you there are certain things you can't say that will get you fired. You can say them, but they will get you fired. Now,
correct.
Will they get you arrested? No. Yeah. Can you say them? Yes. But is there a restriction because you work there and they don't want you to do that? Yes. Now, is that a violation of your First Amendment right? Well, I don't know. Depends on how you look at it, because they are saying you can't do this, but you can do it outside of work. There's going to be consequences if you do it, but they're not going to be jail time. So I don't know. It's interesting.
I think I agree. I think that every employer has a set of standards he's going to set, and you're going to live by those standards or go get another job.
Right.
You're not going to get arrested. You're going to go get another job, and that's where I think that a lot of hate speech at work will come in, regardless of what direction it goes. But in America, depending on the tone of society, we dictate what hate speech is based on what direction we want things to go in the country, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. If it's hate, it's hate. If it's not, it's not. And the point is that, listen to comedy. Turn on Comedy Central. If you can't tell me, and turn on the evening news, if you can't tell me that there isn't hate speech towards Christians and Jews today, then you're not listening at all. And the point is, they're not using a specific word, but they don't need to. It's pretty obvious what's going on. So here's my whole point. If they want to do that, that's fine. Let them do it. But the point is, we always, from the very beginning of time, have had the ability to say, that's going on, but that's not me. That's going on, but that's not me. And say to our children, you know what? I know you heard that. I know that person said that. But we don't talk that way. And this is why. And then what you do, if I'm out with you and we're a personal friend and I hear you doing it, I say, hey, Scott, really, that's pretty tacky, And it's called the personal responsibility. We're trying to legislate it out of this country in everything, not just maybe legislation is the wrong term, but, decide what people can say, decide what's wrong and what's right for everybody. I mean, I can tell you as a Bible-believing Christian what, Scott, I desire for you to know and do and to believe. And I do that because I want your life to be better. But if you disagree with me, I'm not then going to come back and say, well, you're just a piece of garbage, you need to die. And that's wrong. So there's nothing wrong with telling anyone your opinion. You could come to me and throw the most liberal opinion at me in the world of what you think I want to do. All I'm going to do is disagree with you, but we're still going to be friends. You see my point?
So where is there anything that you feel that on Sunday that you could not get up and say in front of your congregation?
In front of our congregation? Boy, I tread that line all the time. Probably.
Well, see, that's interesting.
But the reason I do that is because there's things that have become touchy issues today. And with touchy issues, the only thing that I can do as a pastor, and this is something I have to do, because I believe that we're supposed to teach the Word of God. If Scripture goes a certain direction with something. And there are certain doctrines that are there or certain things we should or shouldn't do. And something in society is different than that. Maybe even in our own congregation, and I'm sure there's quite a bit of it, because I'll be honest with you, one of the main things I talk about probably is personal excess, pride, arrogance. I mean, everyone thinks, oh, pastors from pulpit yelling about gays and this and that. No, that's not what we do. I mean, the bottom line is we teach the Word of God, and whatever is something that comes into where we're reading, we're going to explain it and tell the truth on it. But yeah, there are certainly things that I know on Sunday morning that there's a strong possibility when I go there that there's going to be people that get angry. I'll give you an example. I had a couple stop coming to the church because I was teaching a group of teenagers one day, and I was talking about the dangers of some of the satanic stuff in society and where that leads. And, a lot of the death culture, and we, when I say death culture, what I mean by that is that we are in a culture that has so numbed us to death that I'm not even sure that all young people grasp the reality of death sometimes with the rate of suicide and whatnot. But, you know, we see it constantly, the disgusting violence, the horror shows have gone off the hook. I mean, if you look at Psycho, for instance, what did we really see in Psycho? It was imagination, you know, because all you saw was the outline, the figure, and the music behind it. But today, man, they're disemboweling people on, you know, and it creates a hardness there, and a lot of the, you know, the whole skulls and the death and all that kind of stuff. It's not cool. And as a pastor, I'm going to tell them it ain't cool. And I know people that have gone down that road that their lives are fried today. And I shared that. And this was a family that embraced that kind of stuff. And they didn't want to come anymore. Well, I'm not going to not say that because I believe it's unhealthy for them to be involved in that. I'm going to say that. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I should be allowed to. Now, if you want to go to a church that embraces satanic stuff and skulls and the death culture, I'm sure you'll find a place out there that will support that. But as far as myself as the pastor and our church as the body of Christ, we're going to follow what the Word of God says. And I think that a society needs to look at things that way. We don't need to hate each other. Do you realize, first of all, the Samaritan woman was just that, she was Samaritan. And then there's something else that most people don't realize. She was the first person that Jesus revealed himself to as the Son of God. That lowly, rotten Samaritan woman, as society called her at that time. What was he teaching in that? He was teaching is that I love all of you. And that all of you can have redemption in your life. And that was the lesson there. And I think that we all do. Scott, if you come across to me in a very offensive manner to me, if you believe in something that I think is just horribly wrong or immoral, I have the right for that belief. But it doesn't mean that I don't care about you and want something better for you. It doesn't mean there has to be hatred between us. And but at the same time, am I going to say to one of my children, hey, I want you to go hang out with this person for a while and pick their brain and hear what they're, see what they're all about? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say, you know what, this is the standard that I want to live by as a family, that I have the right to raise my children by, in the freedom in this country, just like that person on the other side has a right in their mind to raise their children the way that they want to. But we are being more and more forced into society in one way or the other. One huge way, and I've talked about it a lot lately, is the fact that the evolution being taught in the public school. I mean, most Christians across the board are horribly opposed to that. But yet that is being forced on their children by the NEA did that. You know, this is what we're going to teach, and this is the way it's going to be. And there was a huge argument, if you remember, 20 years ago, about wanting equal time to just intelligent design. They didn't say God, intelligent design. And no, that wouldn't fly. And, you know, just recently there was a Yale professor that came out and said, you know, I've been in the evolution camp for years, and after all my years of study, I got to come back and say, guys, this model didn't work. It never worked. It couldn't work. There's too many holes in it. It's the odds of that happening are so far out that there it's impossible. He wasn't ready to call himself a Christian by any means, but he's ready to say that, you know what, we need to look at the theory of intelligent design and give it some thought and quit forcing this down everybody's, all these kids' throat. I don't like that. Now, I don't like the fact that my kids are that's being done. But as an American, I have the right to sit my child down at home and say, you know what, I know this is what they're teaching. You're going to have to answer the questions to pass the test, but by no means do you have to agree with that, and this is why, and teach them what the truth is, and then they'll come out with something. But the point is, we're beginning to get in the country where there's certain things we're willing to force and other things we're willing to not, that would have the same standing and the same plane on the importance of them. And more we're expecting government to do what we have the responsibility to do. Scott, if when I was around you all the time, all you did was use ethnic slurs on people, well, first of all, that couldn't happen. I wouldn't be around you all the time. See my point?
Well, and I think that's the issue. See, here's what I think it is. I don't think, because you are going to have people who are bigoted, you are going to have people who don't agree with you, you are going to have people who have different opinions than you have, that's without question. That's just people. We have not broken down exactly why the human does what they do yet. So you're going to have that. I think where our responses have changed is exactly that, in our response. We are so quick to point out people who are wrong and why you're wrong. And I'll tell you why you're wrong. And then you're getting into a whole thing. And this is where it all gets tied up. And I think that's one of the big problems. Because if somebody has that opinion, it's people's free will to try to correct them. I go ahead and do it. It's not illegal. You can certainly have that discussion. But are you really going to change them? How many times does that really happen? How many times do you really change what they believe?
Because in my case, a lot.
Well, I think it's
and I don't change them. I believe God changes them.
But I think if somebody's ready to change, they will change.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think if they believe what they believe and they're entrenched in what they believe, you could feed them any amount of factual information. They won't do it.
But you know, when Jesus, before he ascended in Matthew 28, he said to go to all parts of the world and preach the gospel and teach the gospel, and that's his gospel. And as Christians, that's what we do. The difference, I think, one of the many differences between us and many religions in the world and what they've done is that there's a difference between preaching the gospel and forcing the gospel. And because we believe it's a personal decision that you're not going to force people to change, I feel that it is an obligation of mine and a duty to tell you what I believe about what God says about your life, because I think it's going to improve your life greatly. But beyond that, I got to let it go. And I've heard people say, pastors say, well, I saved 10 people last week. You never saved anybody. You might have told them the truth of Scripture and as it should be, but yet God saves people, you don't. And people make that personal decision. However, in other parts of the world, what we see going on, I don't know, you ever seen me wear that? I wear a band sometimes that says, I am an N, and they don't stand alone. And the reason I wear that is because in the Middle East right now, primarily in Iraq, in Afghanistan, if the N, the Islamic N, is what they use to stand for Nazarene. A Nazarene is a follower of Christ. And they go through villages, and people that have businesses and homes that are suspected of being Christians, they paint a big N on the side of. And then when the goon squads come through, they know who to burn down and who to kill and who to, you know, the point is, that to me is extremism. You know, either you convert or you die. And that's being done by the thousands. We're not even hearing about it. And there's so much of it going on in Nigeria, and on it goes, in Darfur and all those different regions. But, you know, the point is that in America, we have the right to believe. We've always had the right. Religious freedom was just that. It wasn't forced religion. And what they were doing in England at the time, they were forcing the Catholic Church on everyone. Well, no, the Church of England. They're forcing it on everyone, and then the Catholic Church, really, there's not a lot of difference in the two. And that's a neat story. Well, it's an interesting story, too. But the point is, people that were wanting to read their Bible and people were wanting to have a personal relationship with Christ, they weren't tolerating at all. And that's the problem. And, you know, the reason the pilgrims, you know, originally went to, I want to say Denmark, but it's not. My mind just went blank on me. Anyway, the reason that they left when they did was because it was the only place they could go where they wouldn't be persecuted at that time in the world. The church had that big of an arm of a reach on what they wanted to believe. And, you know, then, of course, they ended up through circumstances where the king found what they were printing, and they got ran back to England, and they ended up back here. But anyway, the point is that, you know, we can't force that kind of thing on people. We can't. Forced religion doesn't work because maybe religion does, but forced true believers, people that are the church that follow Christ, that's a personal decision. That's not something that you go sign up for. People might think that, but it's not. It's not, well, once you join that church, you got to do blah, blah, blah. You know, I find great freedom in what I believe. But I guess this whole conversation to me kind of almost has to go back to two things. Personal responsibility, actually three things. Personal responsibility, taking action for your responsibilities, you know, being proactive in your own responsibilities. And then I would say maybe I'll just leave it at those two. But having that person to say, you know, I don't want my kids to hear that. So I'm going to take my time, as I'm supposed to as a parent, and sit down. We're going to talk about this, and not constantly trying to force someone else to. We're about out of time.
We got about 7 minutes.
You know, I'll give you a good example. You know, the couple that got sued over baking the cake for the couple that was that I think they were a gay couple. Now, here's the deal with that. They didn't want to bake him a cake because he didn't agree with what they were doing with it. Who cares? Go somewhere else. You see what I mean? If there was a gay couple that had a bakery and they didn't want to, if the situation were turned, you know, would you force them to do? No, I'm not going to go there. I'll just go somewhere where they do. And that's the way it's always been. But when we start trying to say, you will either accept what I believe, and it's going to show by your actions and what you do, or you're going to be sued. Now, can you imagine that? Can you imagine, Scott, me suing you or anyone else because of a personal belief that they had? That then resulted in an action of something they would or wouldn't do. I mean, people every day in America don't do business with Joe down the road because they heard he don't pay his bills. Okay?
Well, and I think that was the problem. I think what happened there, my whole problem with that whole story when it was going on was I didn't understand why it was a story.
It was made to be one.
Well, it was, but it was made to be one by both groups. The people who supported the baker and the people who didn't support the baker. Because I saw equal amount of news stories from people who did support the baker and interviewed him and thought he was great, and he's exactly within his rights to do what he wants to do. And then I saw the people who supported the couple who said they have every right to sue and they can do what they want, and that's so.
But what was it born out of? It was born out of the fact, believe me, the baker did not ask to be sued.
Okay. No, no.
And once he was sued, was he supposed to just lay down and take it, or was he supposed to speak up and say this is wrong?
No, and he has every right to do that. But I think the interesting thing, what I kept saying during that whole mess was, this was a cake. This was a cake. I don't know that the baker was invited to the wedding. I don't know that the baker was friends of these people. I don't know that he was being asked to go to the wedding and deliver the cake. What I didn't understand was, I just kept asking people, now, the whole thing, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, if the aunt, because I know this happens a lot, when you're putting a big wedding together, sometimes somebody who's not the husband or the wife, or the husband and the husband, or the wife and the wife, however people want to do it now, they're not the ones going down to purchase the cake, okay? Well, what if the aunt of these two guys was handling the cake? Now, does that cake baker ask everybody who's baking a cake where this cake is going to go? Because if the aunt was doing it, if it's a 70-year-old woman in there who's buying that cake, he would have never known. That cake would have been used in the exact same way that he didn't want it to be used for that gay wedding. And there would have never been a sue. There would have. So,
well, if you ask to have two male figures put on top of the cake, it's pretty obvious to the baker what you're doing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying if that part of it, and that's how
it's what's known,
right?
Let me give you an example. Say there's someone down the street, and they're a person that does tarot cards and is into that whole thing, which I think is horrible personally, and a person that is into that, what I will call a dark world. But say they also have a side business where they bake pies, okay? I got to be honest with you, Scott. That's not where I'm going to get my pie.
Right, right. And I think, and that is everybody's right.
And I think the thing with this couple was, everyone knew them and knew that they were outspoken Christians and were... See, there's the other thing that we have to... Well, something happening in the church today a lot is that because of people with a particular agenda are trying to cause situations where there's conflict so they can bring it to the forefront. We have had, I went to a security thing a couple years ago, put on by another denomination of church that teaches you certain contracts and things you have to do to protect yourself because there are people literally shopping for reasons to sue people.
Right.
And how sad is that?
Well, this is the thing. See, as a consumer, there are a lot of reasons you won't go to a certain place. Well, I'm not going to go to that restaurant because I don't like their food. I'm not going to go buy the pies over there because that lady doesn't make good pies. And as a consumer, you have the right to do that. That's the definition of the word consumer. But when you open a business to the public and you start denying people... for whatever reason. I'm not just saying the gay issue. But if you start denying, if I'm open for public in the public square and my job is a cake baker or a pie baker or whatever I am, I don't know. It's very difficult to turn people away because...
Most of the time you don't know anything about it.
Right. And if you get past the gay issue, if you get past that in this particular case, okay, let's say somebody opened up a shop in town and said, I will not sell to Italians. I will not sell to Jewish people. That's not going to go over well. And probably I guarantee not. The Jewish community is going to be very upset, and the Italians are going to be upset. And that, I think, is the problem with that. And people, if they don't want... Nobody should have to support gay marriage if they don't want to. And certainly you're entitled to your religious convictions. But the problem is when you're running a business, that's not practical to turn somebody and tell them why you're doing it. And I also said, what if the guy who ran the shop, totally convictious and knew it was a gay cake and didn't want to do it, why didn't he just say, I'm busy, I'm out of town, I can't. Why did the reason have to be given? because that fueled the fire. I think there was a lot of ways to avoid
that. Did they come out and say that was why?
He did.
Okay. Well, you know, I guess he was standing on his convictions and wanted them
right,
to know it.
Right. And I think, and that's where I think they were standing on theirs, and we got what we got.
And we got what we got. And but it should have been, it goes back to my whole thing. Walk away. Tell your other gay friends or people that sympathize with your belief, don't go to that shop because they won't support gay people. You know, don't make it a public thing and try to get the people sued and lose. You know, that's not fair. What if there was no avenue then for those people to come back and ruin that those people's livelihood? Just because I disagree with you on some issue gives me the right to destroy your livelihood?
No, I don't think it does. I think the problem is, though, I just think, like I said before, if somebody opened up a shop in Marion, Ohio, and said, I will sell to everybody but the specific group of people, it's going to hurt their business.
Years ago, I walked into a bar, many years ago, when I walked into bars. And I walked into a bar with a friend of mine to sit down and order. We didn't know the place. We walked in and sat down and thought. Well, I looked around and immediately I noticed everyone was staring at me. Well, then I noticed that I didn't see any white people in there. And nobody came and asked what we wanted. We sat down at a table. I walked up to the bar, and the guy leaned over and says, buddy, you're in the wrong place. I think you better leave.
Right.
Now, you know what I did? I left, and that was that. They didn't want me there. I left. And my point being, I'd never go back in there again.
And
but I didn't make an issue of it.
No, and I think that was the right way to handle it in the cake baking situation. I just think that once I don't know what I would love to know exactly what because to me, I'm sure that's happened before. That is no way that's the first time that's ever happened. So why did that particular case get so much attention? What was it about that? I don't know. Because I am sure that there are people who have religious convictions all over the country who have refused to
do all kinds of things.
Yes,
or non-religious convictions.
It didn't get that attention. Right. So what was it about that particular case that was so heated?
I think you want me to honestly tell you the truth? The media got a hold of it.
Well, it did, but what was so entertaining about that case?
Because there were so strong feelings on both sides.
And I think maybe that is why it was a bigger case, because nobody walked away.
But you know, I'll say this because I know we got to get off here in a second. But here's what I was trying to pull together, I think, with all of this, is that one, if someone is being physically hurt or mentally hurt, like a child or an elderly person or someone defenseless, we have to make laws to protect those people. But the truth is, when it comes to all the feelings and the opinions and the views and different morality, we need to learn to exist together, disagree, not hate, disagree, and take personal responsibility in how we react to different people and different things, to talk to our children, to explain, and quit forcing one agenda down Christians are always being told that they force their religion down people's throat. Well, guess what? When you force evolution down our kids' throat, you're forcing your religion down their throat, because it is religion. It takes great faith to believe in evolution. It's just another form of religion being forced down our throat. And I think that what we have to do is agree to disagree in many areas, state our case, and let it go, and quit taking everything to the courts.
I would agree with that, and we're out of time on that note. We'll be back next week.
See you, buddy.
On South Main Street, telephone number 740-262-6050.